golfj.com.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Golf J Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett Ticone and Doug Brown here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls, New York. It's Monday, August 8th, 2016. And tonight we're going to talk about Russell Knox winning at the Travelers, which wasn't even the biggest story to come out of TPC River Highlands. Jim Furyk's 58 on Sunday. And we'll preview golf's return to the Olympics, which, after all this hype, is actually this week. So, hello, fellas. Welcome back to the studio.
Hi, Jim.
What's up, Jim? How are you?
And so, if we could only pick one thing to talk about this week, would it be Russell Knox, Furyk's 58, or the Olympics?
None of the above.
What would you want to talk about? What could be a bigger story than that?
Nike no longer making golf clubs. My clubs in my bag are now collector's items.
They're not worth a buck.
Not only in my mind, they're collector's items.
That was big news. So there is a lot to talk. We're going to talk about, we don't have to choose. We're going to talk about all three of those things tonight. And let's start out with.
You know I'm a Nike guy, though, so that was big news for me.
and probably Rory was a little upset.
Yeah, probably.
He'll do okay.
Yeah, he'd go back to Titleist.
Yeah.
So Russell Knox wins his second tournament of the year. He also won the HSBC WGC event back in November in China. And he closed with a 2-under 68 for a 14-under total at TPC River Highlands this weekend. He's 31 years old, winning for the second time, and didn't come from behind fashion. Really kind of slid into it when Berger blew up on the back nine, and Jerry Kelly at 49 years old made a nice run.
Right.
But were you guys able to catch any of the final round?
Yeah, I was surprised Berger fell apart.
Yeah, he was so solid all week in the 62, I think it was. Didn't he shoot 62 Saturday?
Yeah. I thought it was his tournament by far to win by going away. And then to fade like that and get beat by quite a bit. Jerry Kelly, great round.
Yeah, and you'll see him in the FedEx Cup playoffs. I think he's 75th now.
Right. We were talking about him last week.
Yeah.
How good a year he's having.
I know, he hangs around.
Yeah.
He's fun to watch. He's entertaining. I bet you if you walked with him in the gallery, you'd have a good time.
Right.
You know, because he's always animated.
No doubt.
But good win for Russell Knox.
Yeah, he has never so far in his career started the FedEx playoffs ranked better than 44th, and now he is fourth. And as anyone who follows the playoffs now, as we start to remember some of this stuff, now that the playoffs have been around for a few years, if you get to the Tour Championship in the top five, you control your own destiny.
Right.
And winning the FedEx Cup. And so he right now is in the top four. There's one more tournament left to go, or two more, John Deere this week and the Wyndham, and then it's off to the playoffs.
Right.
But that deck will get shuffled pretty heavily, those three tournaments prior to the FedEx tournament itself.
Sure.
Someone still going to have to play well to stay in the top five.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and someone who knows who can win. Right. You know, win would be big. Look what it did for Knox.
Billy Horschel came out of nowhere a couple years ago.
And these guys can make up – some of these guys that are playing this week can make up some ground because there's a lot of guys sitting out the next couple of tournaments.
Right.
You know, Jordan Spieth sitting out based on him not going to the Olympics. He said it wouldn't be right to play in this tournament. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance for these guys to climb up the ladder and really improve their place to avoid, you know, the getting cut the first week, so to speak. So.
They said yesterday Russell Knox isn't going to play again until the FedEx. So he's done already.
Is he?
Yeah. So he's not playing John Deere. He's not playing Wyndham. He apparently didn't make the Olympics. I didn't hear that he backed out, so I assume he didn't make his country's team. And then so he's not back until the first round of the FedEx tournament. So his points are frozen, theoretically, right now at this point.
Well,
see the standings.
You're going to pull up the standings?
Yeah. So Knox is in the top five. We got Jason Day. Dustin Johnson's 34 points behind him. Adam Scott has, Day has 2735, Johnson 2701, Scott 2063, Knox 2001. And then Jordan Spieth is at 1965 to round out your top five in the FedEx Cup standings.
Yes, and it's amazing because Scott was so hot early in the year.
Yeah.
And since then, he hasn't done much.
Well, he was hot, too.
But he hung on to a top five position. He was way out in the lead, you know, when we headed into the Masters. So, so really, guys, I think more important than Knox's win this week is the historic round shot by Jim Furyk. And to me, it's amazing for a lot of reasons. Number one, it wasn't the first time he broke 60 on tour.
Yeah.
He did it before. I can remember growing up, it was Al Geiberger, the only guy to ever do it, Mr. 59.
Yep.
Now, Furyk has done it twice, and he bested it by one. And a lot of people might say, oh, it was only a par 70. But it was a tough par 70. There's only two par 5s.
Right.
So, and it was just not a – it was a course you could score on. But, I mean, Justin Thomas shot 62 and lost by four on Sunday. So that's one thing that's impressive about it is he's done it twice. The second thing that's impressive about it is that he's – how old is he?
48 or
49? 46 years old. I got it right here. 46 years old.
He did 2 years ago. So both times he's done it, you know, mid-40s. And, you know, that's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, and then the third thing – is that somebody did it last week on the web.com tour, shot 58.
Right.
What's the guy's name? He was
good old what's his name?
Yeah, good old what's his name from the web.com that shot 58.
Mr. 58 on the web.com, that's what it was.
So we saw two 58s in 1 week.
Right. Steven Yeager.
Yeah, that's right, Yeager.
Yeah, we mentioned him last week. Wait, yeah, and it's been, what, 600,000 some odd rounds in the history of the PGA Tour?
So Furyk's played well since he came off injury because he missed the first half of the year,
right,
with a wrist injury. I think he had surgery.
Yeah.
But since he's come back, he's played very, very well, even though this week he was one over par going into Sunday's round. So he wasn't on point necessarily going out Sunday morning.
Yeah.
But still, he made the cut.
75 on Saturday.
So to give him credit, he's had a good season after he got started. And then yesterday was obviously just tremendous.
And, you know, you could say his 59 was actually better than the 58 because Sunday's 58 was 10.7 strokes better than the scoring average for the day. And when he did it at the 2013 BMW Championship, shot 59, that was 12.1 strokes better than the day's scoring average. So,
right. And that was also a FedEx Cup tournament.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's look at this. It's a 58.
Yeah. True.
Okay.
Hard.
I don't care about the other math. That's a 58. Get your license plate made from DMV.
Right.
Drive around with that the rest of your life.
Only one.
Right.
I was looking for that 57. I mean,
part of the last get another license plate later on.
He lifted out a putt.
Yeah.
And he had a look at 18 at a 57.
I think you're going to see a lot of players over the next several years chasing those numbers. There's been a lot of 60s and 61s this year.
Yeah.
Let's face it, they're getting longer, they're getting better.
They're getting better training, they're getting better equipment, and they're getting better golf balls.
The courses are always set up perfectly for them, too. So
you're not going to see four rounds with 60,
right?
But I think you're going to see some more of those 59s and 58s get shot.
Well, like you said, how many tournaments do you see within the four rounds of one tournament, guys shooting 62s and 63, 61?
Look at the majors. We had 63 in virtually every major this year by somebody, right, other than the Masters, but... it just seems like the scores are shifting a little bit. I just think you're going to see some of those records fall. Could somebody shoot 54? He had a chance to shoot 56.
Yeah. I mean, and this was a more difficult course and an easier course. Somebody gets hot. But what does it say about Jim Furyk that he's done this twice now? Because when I think that there were probably plenty of times when a tour player shot 60, 61, 62, that it probably could have easily been 59 or 58 if he didn't get in his own head somewhere along the line. Somewhere along the line, you say to yourself, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't possibly keep up this pace.
Yeah.
And I think that Jim Furyk must have approached his round as if, you know, the next hole there is every bit of an opportunity to birdie it as the last hole.
Right.
What he did before that didn't matter, isn't going to influence what he does on the next hole. So he just... stay focused in the shot, and next thing you know, you're 11 under after 12.
Just keep going. Yep.
And then I think it may have crept into his head at that point because he did slow down, but that's also just probably the nature of things. You can't possibly keep birdieing holes like that. But what does it say about Furyk's mindset and experience?
I think when he gets going, he's going to ride it.
Yeah.
you know, he wasn't going to mail it in, shoot 65. He knew he had something going special. Let's keep going. I got to give him all the credit in the world because he wasn't playing for much. He didn't need the money.
Right.
Because he was in the third group out of the day. That's how far down the line he was.
16 back of Daniel Berger, I think.
Yeah.
And move up to fourth or fifth place in the tournament. You got to give him credit. Hung in there. Hey, you got it? If the cards are rolling, play them, right?
Yeah, man. Yep. So think about all the guys that haven't, all the great players that haven't shot those numbers. Right. You know, they've done it, you know, whether it was at their home course during practice someday, that, you know, you hear stories of Tiger shooting crazy numbers and Phil shooting crazy numbers back home. But all those type of guys that didn't do this in tournament play, mm-hmm. Ben Hogan's and, you know, Sarazen's and all those guys, and Jack Nicklaus. Right. I think it does say a lot to what you were saying, Jim, about the equipment. The length that these guys hit the ball to give themselves positions with so many more short irons in the greens that right. they're able to put the ball so much closer.
Furyk not a long hitter, though. Like, that's why you'd think,
true,
with all these bombers out there, they'd be the ones just to assault a course at some point. Furyk more of a technician, but with the equipment probably at age 46 to still be able to put himself in position.
Yeah.
And the conditions are terrific. You know, those greens are so smooth.
I think that's a big thing, too, when you're talking about old times versus modern times.
Yeah.
Right. That's the biggest piece, because he's putting still greens. Probably a 270-yard driver, to be my guess. He's not 300. Even back when he was younger, he was probably 270. So he's just kind of kept up.
Mm-hmm.
But his short game is, when he's sharp, is obviously as good as anybody's. And it's all about making putts.
Yeah, well, that's why it's hard to believe that Mickelson or Tiger in his prime, when he was putting so well, that their short games never... Well, dialed this in.
Furyk hit 18 greens, so he didn't need a short game. But putting-wise, I think, like I said, the condition of the greens now versus the dirt versus Gene Sarazen's day or even Nicklaus's day, it's almost impossible to probably make as many putts as he did in a row on those greens because they just weren't as true, especially third group out in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though those greens are fast, it doesn't take much effort to hit the ball to get it to roll 20 feet, which sometimes makes it easier to putt.
Yeah.
Everybody gets, oh, my God, these greens are so darn fast.
Perfect.
You think of Gene Sarazen era, they probably had stint meter of 5.
Yeah, they really wrapped them.
You got to beat them and all that. So
hitting them with the metal that they were using on their putters. And
use a brassy.
Yeah. Kind of deadens the ball as opposed to the faces that they have on them now.
Yeah. If you got the feel, 20-footers, like putt into a garbage can. I'm sure that's the way he felt.
A lot of factors go into it, but the bottom line is, like you said, he hit 18 greens. He was in a zone with his club, so his irons were dialed in yesterday, and he was making putts on beautiful greens. So
I'm glad for him. Last week, remember, I told you I'd put him on the Ryder Cup team, so now I'm staying with that solid pick.
I think he played himself right on with that 58.
He's on there now?
Yeah, I mean, how can you not? Because not only it wasn't just that one round, but he played well since the injury, you know. So
yeah,
I think you got to put him on with the experience. This is obviously going to be his last chance. Well, I shouldn't say obviously,
never
but
know.
Likely. You know, his next time as Ryder Cup will probably be as a captain.
Yeah. Well, he's a grinder too. He's had some good moments.
Yeah.
So
I mean, he had a couple failures there. Two Ryder Cups ago. He was the pivot player, right?
He's
been up and down. Didn't cash in, right? Took forever to putt and all that, but...
He's been up and down, but
I would put him on the team right now.
When you got a fairly young team, too.
Davis Love, you heard it here first.
He'd be a good addition to stabilize the team a little bit, stabilize a very good team.
Yeah, we don't need the maturity necessarily, but if somebody's hot, we need him.
Yeah, nobody was hotter than he was Sunday, that's for sure. And you mentioned the clubs. This is what he was playing. He did it with a Callaway Chrome softball. So now, hey, Callaway's got a real claim to fame. The lowest round ever shot on tour was done with a Callaway Chrome soft, which you got to imagine that makes the folks over at Titleist a little uneasy and a little uncomfortable. They were probably rooting against him shooting 58, right?
They have LPGA one, too, because Annika shot a 69 or a 59, right?
With the Callaway?
Yeah, she was a big Callaway person.
And so Furyk has the Callaway Great Big Bertha 9-degree driver. He also has Callaway Big Bertha Alpha 816 14-degree 3-wood. Callaway X2 Hot Pro 20-degree hybrid. His irons are 4-through pitching wedge, Callaway Razor X forged. Wedges are a Callaway Mac Daddy 2 at 50 degrees, a Titleist Vokey SM4 at 56, and then a Callaway Mac Daddy 260. and he putts with an Odyssey Versa 1. So that is the formula for low scoring, apparently, if you want to configure your bag. Just remember to throw one Vokey wedge in there with your two Callaway wedges.
There you go.
He must really like that wedge, that Vokey.
Must be sneaking in there like that.
Yeah, 56 degrees. He's got a 50, 56, and 60. So he also, with the final round, jumped up to clinch his 10th consecutive appearance in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And so that's going to ease a lot off of his mind. He wasn't going to play the deer next year anyways, but he would have had a little more pressure on him at the Wyndham, where he'll play next. See what he follows that 58 with. So we'll get to the John Deere, actually, with our fantasy picks. But right now, I think the PGA Tour is being overshadowed a bit by the Olympics, which get underway Thursday. They run Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just like any other golf tournament. You can watch them on the Golf Channel exclusively, which I thought was kind of interesting because, you know, all the other Olympics are on another NBC, CNBC, MSNBC, NBC,
right.
But they're pulling this off and just putting it right on the Golf Channel, which is the only Olympic, and I imagine they're going to cover the women too, right, on Golf Channel.
Yes.
Does it get more coverage if we have a few bigger names that decided to go instead of the ones that we have? I mean, does it go to NBC or the primetime channels if we're getting different players there? I mean,
I think this is
a lot of guys.
And they're talking about growing the game. Maybe they'll show highlights on the other channels, but any non-golfer is not going to turn their channel to the Golf Channel.
No
you way. Know what I mean? So this is really...
It took a big hit by all these guys sitting out.
So you think they would have?
I think absolutely. Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Adam Scott, all those guys. I think they would definitely put a couple of those, not all of them, but Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, you know, they transcend sports, so I think they're more of a story.
No doubt.
Across the board as opposed to just, you know, no offense to our four guys. They're all big names in the world of golf, but they don't draw the way, you know. Ricky's haircut's not going to get it, and Bubba's big drives with his pink driver aren't going to get people to change over to Golf Channel.
Right.
But nonetheless, it'll be fun to watch for us golf fans.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to watch. If you like tournaments with weak fields like the John Deere, and, you know, because I think what you're going to see is an unfamiliar course with different graphics, you know, on the screen, and it's just going to be another golf tournament with a subpar field, really.
You know what? It's got the feel of a European PGA Tour event. You know what I mean?
Yep,
I mean, we have four USA guys, so everybody else
only
is
16 people from the PGA Tour are playing in this,
right? So it definitely has a feel of a European PGA Tour event, not even to the level of the President's Cup.
Right. It's like Sunday morning watching the Golf Channel, and you're seeing the regular event on the tour.
Absolutely. And you know a few names, and you know, most of them you don't.
Right.
And some are fringe players, some aren't. Like you said, there's only 16 guys total from the PGA Tour. There's a decent amount more from the European PGA Tour, but there's also a few that aren't even on any tour. You know what I mean? Any of the major tours, like the lone representative from Brazil. He's not in either of those tours.
Right.
So I think that's more the feel of it, the fact that it's around. I'm honestly more excited about next week's women's tournament than I am the men's, because it is the full field, the top competitors.
Yeah, I believe that will be the biggest event of the year in women's golf.
Yes.
The most paid attention to, and the winner of that will have more opportunity than the winner of one of their five majors. Don't
right.
they
yeah,
play five?
Yeah.
And where this, you know, will be a little boost for whoever wins, probably
for about a week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just so new. We're going to have to wait and see. They haven't done it since 1904. And if you do want to watch on the Golf Channel, coverage is 6:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Thursday through Saturday, and then 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday.
They did pair them pretty good though, for TV with some of the groups, you know, Willett and Kuchar. Are together, Bubba Watson and
10:03,
yeah, and Watson, Keimer, and Lahiri. So I mean, golf people will know Lahiri's name, and the other two, obviously Garcia and Reed and Griot. That's a good pairing. Fowler and Rose and Johnny Vegas. Stenson, Corberabello, and Jaidi. So they have some good pairings at the least for those first 2 days. So we'll see what comes of that. But, you know, again, the girls or the ladies have placed so much more emphasis themselves and have talked about it so much more and have really promoted it so much more and how much more excited they are to be going to it. And, you know, especially in the U.S., for the ones that went, you know, it was disappointing for some of those that didn't qualify. So it definitely will I think it'll get more attention next week once the men are out of the way to watch the women's tournament. And I think there's some better backstories that NBC will bring to the table and Golf Channel. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, the difference in the coverage too and how much more they talk about it and promote it.
It remains to be seen. You see Michael Phelps win a medal last night and they come out of the water and they go nuts, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't know if we're going to see that same type of reaction on the 18th green when somebody realizes they won the gold medal. I hope we do.
Right. Well, I've got a bold prediction for the Olympics. We're going to get our Olympic winner picks now instead of in the fantasy segment, okay?
Okay.
And I predict that the story of the Olympics, the one thing that's going to save golf is that Sergio Garcia is going to win the gold, and it will become what he'll say his biggest, you know, victory. It will be his it will be the major he never won.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will be probably the best outcome for anybody who's a fan of golf in the Olympics. If Sergio wins, I think there's some interest there. So I think he is going to win because he hadn't finished outside the top five in any start worldwide since May, before he missed the cut last week at the PGA. So he had been playing unbelievable golf.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot less people to beat this week than he did at any of those tournaments.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Henrik Stenson, the way he's been playing. I like him to win it. And I think, is this a more successful event if a non-U.S. Team member wins the gold? Just because do some of these other guys feel stronger about it, or is it just one of those things where,
it depends. If Stenson wins it, I don't think people think too much of it. It's just, but I think if someone comes like out of nowhere, like Felipe Aguilar from Chile,
yeah,
then that would, you know, be a real shocker. So there's that whole USA versus Russia, you know, in the 1980 Olympics opportunity for some of these no names, but
yeah,
it's not going to happen because there's just golf's not like that.
Yeah, that's true.
There's too big of a gap, and these professionals, you know, one of them is going to put together a round that none of these other guys can catch.
Right. Yeah, it's chalk. What about you, Doug?
I think there'll be somebody up there on the board, though, from this guy from Chile that you were just talking about. Somebody's going to make a run that would be a surprise. But that happens every major.
But then fall short.
But that happens every major as well. All right, so I want to pick the entire U.S. team, as long as they don't wear the hats I saw them wearing today during the practice round.
The one that just says USA on it. That's
it
what they
need. It says Team USA.
Team
it's
USA.
Awful.
Yeah,
they interviewed the Canadian guys. They had a maple leaf on the top of their hat. They looked terrific. U.S. hats look awful. You can't play golf without good attire.
Is there a coach? There's no, like, coach or anything, no, right? There's nobody over there with these four. They're just over there as individuals.
Yeah, they're just kind
of. They got uniforms picked up by somebody, so that's enough of that. I'm going to go off the board. I'm going to pick Effie Barnrat to win the gold medal.
Wow, for India.
Yes.
Man, that would be that would be a big story.
You look when you look at the course from overhead, you don't get really too fired up about the course.
No, it doesn't even
sure
look that good. It's flat. Although I guess the greens are slanty.
There's no rough. There's no trees.
That stuff. It's a lot built of sand to blend in with their countryside there. So it's gonna be interesting.
I can't pass final judgment till I see it with my own eyes. But right now I'm thinking that it's gonna overall be a disappointment.
They're calling for about and a minus 20 score to win this thing too.
Yeah, they're saying it's like sandbelt style,
unless
like in
the wind
Australia
blows hard.
If anybody, you know, if the top players in the world were all there, then, you know, if the top 10 of the top 10 players in the world, then that would have saved this event. But to me, it's a subpar. It's got a worse field than the John Deere. The John Deere's a tougher tournament to win than an Olympic gold medal this week.
True.
and it's not because the players at the top, but it's just such a small field. So, like, we could probably, you know, pick a 20 guys out of this thing and bet our life savings that they'd be the one of the winner will come from that group of 20.
Right.
So we got Barnrat, and who'd you take?
Stenson,
and Sergio. So no Americans. And well, why would
I'm contingency of the hats. If they change the hats, I'll go with the Americans.
Which one?
I think we'll get 2 out of 3. And with like good hats, we'll get 2 out of 3.
2 or 3 with good hats and good finishes?
Yes.
So
we'll get 2 medals.
If you, which American's going to finish highest? I don't think it'll be Ricky Fowler.
Cooch.
That's a good bet because he's so consistent. Reed's playing a little better now.
I'm going to take Patrick Reed a bit and finish the highest. He's just that type of personality. With a good hat, Patrick Reed wins a gold medal.
They do. Okay. They have a pretty cool finish to the course, though. The last three holes. The 16th is drivable par 3. It's like 303 yards, par 4. 17 is only 133 yard par 3, and then the 18th is a par 5. Right. Only for them at 571.
Right.
So fairly birdieable three stretch of three holes to finish out the tournament.
Yeah, they want it to be theatrical as possible.
Mm-hmm.
To make it entertaining for the world.
A little birdie, birdie, so eagle maybe?
Hopefully it comes down to something like that because that's what they're trying to strive for.
Yeah, they'll need that.
No matter who wins.
Yeah, so. I have a few guys right there at the end. Be making some birdies and eagles. Right. That'd be sweet.
All right, well, let's move on. It gets underway Thursday. And, you know, next week we'll be talking about it and we'll see what it's like. It's really something different, something unknown, and I'm probably going to hold off judgment till I see it. And wonder what the galleries will be like, just one last thing. You know, I wonder if they'll be, like, smaller than a normal PGA Tour event.
Super
or
quiet.
Well, it's hard. Yeah. There's only 60 players, and there's no real – there's one local guy, right?
Yep.
So it's hard to think there's going to be 30,000 fans from Rio de Janeiro showing up. And I don't know how far is it away from the Olympic Village.
Not terrible, but – yeah, I mean, it's still...
It's harder to spectate, though, than other Olympic sports because, you know, other Olympic sports, you go to an arena and see the whole thing. A lot of the untrained golf fan might not even understand, you know, what it's about,
right,
how to watch a golf event live. So,
typically, your European Tour event doesn't get a big crowd either. It seems like if you watch, it looks like about 10,000 people will, say, show up for a European Tour event.
Or, yeah.
You know, on the U.S. Tour, we see 30, 40, 50,000 fans. That'd be my guess, about 10,000.
All right. Well, hey, got a golf trivia question for you guys here. Tweet your answer to @TheGolfJ. Be the first to tweet us, and the correct answer, you win a Golf J hat. This week's question, who won the gold medal the last time golf was played at the Olympic Games in 1904? And we'll have that answer for you at the end of the show. You will not have to wait till the end of the show to listen to this week's simple tip for better golf. Okay, next week you guys are going to figure out which one's coming up with a tip. This week I got it.
Doug's next week, and I'll go the week after.
Okay, you, there it is.
Same order.
There it is.
Give you a break.
So I can come up with all of these. I can keep coming up with tips, but my tips are usually a little different in that they're not. Generally not going to be focused on the swing. They're going to be focused maybe on other parts around the game. So I can give you a good example of from my round Sunday. And usually a lot of times these tips come from my round. I've been struggling finishing on our golf course, the one I play all the time at Seneca Falls Country Club. Difficult finish, 16th hole is one of the toughest holes around, let alone on our course. And then 17 is a 200-and-something-yard par 3, which isn't overly difficult, but I bet you the scoring average is on that thing's about 3.5 for most of the guys we play with. And then a nice, easy finish on 18, par 5, but out of bounds left. It's not a total walk in the park, but it's a shortish par 5 dogleg left, okay? So I've been struggling, like, all year just putting together a good finish, and it was something that I – was able to do pretty good last year, finish on that course. And it's important for everybody to look ahead and prepare for the finish. If you're confident that you can put together a final good three holes, then you know it makes you able to hold on to a round that you might be losing a little bit along the way. Like if you consider a bad round shooting 80 or higher and you're 7 over on 12, you know, and you're confident that you can get through that finish at even or better, then it's easier to get there. And maybe this is overstated because on our course, 16 is so difficult that generally you think, geez, if you want to shoot a 79, you better be no worse than 6 over before you get there. So anyways, the tip is, you know the shots you need to hit on those last three holes. And specifically on our course, I'm going to focus on 16 and 17 because they give me so much trouble over the years until recently, let's say the past 4 or 5 years, because I would specifically practice like the tee shot on 16. And sometimes if you're able to, you can get right out on the course and go and drop, you know, 8-10 balls on the tee on 16. That's even better. But I would practice the shot I wanted to hit on that tee shot, what I would aim at, every, you know, and did the same thing every time, and already had thought through the strategy of, gee, what should I aim at, because how much risk am I putting here and there, woods on both sides. And then generally the type of shot or shots you're going to need for the second shot. And then the 17th hole, the same thing. It's a par three. You know, you know you're going to hit that shot weeks before you ever play the round. So practice, which in my case, last year I developed a little drawing hybrid, you know, that would just bounce on the green. It was a really safe shot, but I knew when I got up there that I would probably hit that shot well 7 out of 10 times and make par, you know, 7 out of 10 times. And then 18, I don't really do anything special for that hole because I don't struggle with it. So this has been a long-winded tip. But prepare for that finish, because if you're confident that you can finish your round, then it makes it so much easier to stay with your round and with hopes of shooting a good score. And sometimes there's that bonus of where you're playing well, and then you know you get there and you're already prepared for it, and you can go finish even better than you thought. So you're not in the mindset of, oh, geez, I've got to hang on. If I can only just go 2 over on these last three holes, this is what I'd shoot. You don't have to think that. You can say, I'm going to keep going.
2 bars.
Yeah, I'm going Jim Furyk.
Yeah, absolutely.
So does that make sense to you guys?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I struggle with that just a little bit because a lot of the guys on TV will tell you, always focus on the shot you have and that's it.
I guess you are thinking ahead with your score if you're on 12 and you're thinking, if I can just get to 16, but when I get to 16 or 17 and I've practiced that specific shot, and I know what there's not much thinking before I get up there, that's been a real benefit to me, I think. And I closed out a club championship match on 17 last year, hitting a shot really close on 17 that I think is a direct result of my preparation.
So you're not thinking about, when I get to 16, I got to make a par or a bogey or a birdie. You're just thinking about the tee shot shape that I have to have on 16, I can prepare for that by teeing off on 13, 14 with the same type of shape.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That is the shot, the one shot. And then I went off on a tangent. Like I said, knowing that and having confidence, not just for me, but anybody in whatever course you're playing, that you're excited to play that finish because you know that you can finish strong. Everybody likes to finish strong. Then,
you know, the shots
as you're grinding out around, you know, it makes it a little more doable.
And if you come to that hole,
right,
you're in the right position. Now you know the shots you need to hit to finish that off, and you just execute them.
Yep. Yeah. And really, in our course, there is 2.5 key shots. The most key shot is that tee shot on 16. It's the most key. It's the most important. Every shot's important in your round. But if you're going to score, you got to hit that shot. And there's not much relief for you if you don't. You know, you're gonna have a tough time making a par, and could ruin your round. But once that ball's out there in that fairway, and then the second one is the tee shot on 17, because it's right there for you. If you hit it on the green, you have a birdie opportunity and most likely a par. But it's amazing how many times we miss that green. Yeah. It's a 205 or 10 yard straightaway shot. And then the half shot would be that second shot on 16. And the reason why it's only a half is because you have some different options there. If you really don't like the shot, you can lay it up short and still have a good chance at par. And so, but that tee shot on 16, you can't hide from it. And it's not easy to take an iron and lay up, you know, and play it as a par 5. That's still not an easy shot under pressure. And then your second shot to lay up the green, there's woods on both sides. So I just think that tee shot on 16 is like the toughest shot that you face all day at Seneca Falls. Mm-hmm. So.
Well put.
That's this week's golf. Next week, you guys send me some pictures of
Doug's up.
Yeah, I want some visual aids, and we'll get back to maybe some more technical stuff.
I do want to take a quick step back before we move forward in this in the show. Doug, I know you're a little disappointed with those hats, but I just want to let you know that Bubba Watson's ready to go. And this is kind of a precursor to an interview we'll have, whether it's next week or the week after, with the guys from G4 who make great gloves and shoes.
Yeah, they signed Bubba.
Yes, and this is what Bubba will be wearing at the Olympics. So that's Bubba's shoe from G4.
He's going with the high tops,
huh?
He's
going with the high top, stars and stripes, red, white, and blue. He's ready to roll, and you know that's made for him exclusively from G4. That's their high top shoe, and he actually wore it at the PGA Championship, not that one, but he wore the high tops. So, Bubba Watson is definitely bringing his A game uniform wise from G4. So, just for you, Doug.
It's a lot better looking than the hat, I can tell you that.
Well, Bubba's coming to play, so maybe I might change my pick to Bubba Watson, especially with these shoes.
Based on those shoes,
absolutely. those shoes are sweet.
A lot of orders next Monday.
You can play pickup hoops in them, or you can go play golf in them.
A lot of orders for those next Monday, right? From
absolutely. Now these are
somebody.
These are part of the line G4, and then we'll be talking to them soon.
That's G4E.
Yes, G4.com. G4E.com.
So we've been doing this each week now that we're getting at the end. This week we got through the John Deere Classic, followed by the Wyndham Championship, and that's it for the regular season. It's hard to believe, but the Barclays starts on August 25th through 28th, followed by the Deutsche Bank, the BMW, and then the Tour Championship, which gets underway on September 22nd. So just over a month left in the PGA season, but the great golf isn't over at the Tour Championship. Next week would be the Ryder Cup, September 30th through October 2nd. And then the PGA slips into its off-season slumber. The hot stove fires up, and they get back underway in October 13th at the Safeway Open for the 2016-17 season.
Just a short 10 days after the Ryder Cup. It's funny, you read off that list. You have Barclays, Deutsche Bank, BMW, Tour Championship, Ryder Cup, Safeway Open.
The Safeway Open renamed this year. And that's out in El Dorado, I believe, California.
Yeah, Napa there.
So
it's a good area, at least.
So this week, though, pretty important tournament for a lot of golfers hoping to make the cut or improve their FedEx Cup positions prior to the playoffs in a couple weeks. It's going to be at TPC Deer Run. It's a par 71, 7,257 yards. You can watch that on TV on Golf Channel as well, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock on Thursday and Friday. And 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock on Saturday, Sunday. So you can literally sit back on Sunday, wake up, and watch great tournament golf, Olympics, followed by the John Deere all day long.
What do you got, guys?
My pick this week? What you're looking for is my pick this week?
Something like that.
I'm torn between Steve Stricker and Zach Johnson. So I'm going to take Steve Stricker.
Why not? He's won it 3 years in a row.
A little while. He's been hot lately, is why.
He's your 2009 John Deere champ. He's your 2010 John Deere champ. Try saying that three times fast. You have to do it if you're going to talk about Steve Stricker in this tournament, because in 2011, Steve Stricker was your John Deere champ. And Johnson in 2012, which is a good sign for Zach, who's my pick, because this seems like a tournament that if you've won it before, you can win it again, as Jordan Spieth did it, your 2013 John Deere champ and your 2015 John Deere champ. So I say Zach Johnson repeats this year.
I was going to go with Zach Johnson as well, but I don't want to double up there. I'm going to go with Jerry Kelly.
Well, that's a good pick right now too.
Yeah, he's playing well.
Basically, back home too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with him because I think he's had a good year all year long. He's I think he's going to get another win before he gets to the senior tour.
Pretty interesting field, too. Ricky Barr, some of the bigger names, I guess, and there's a lot of guys. This is like the mid-tier tour roster. You know, they're all here. Ricky Barnes, Keegan Bradley, Stuart Sink, Brendan Dejean skipped the Olympics for this one because he wanted the FedEx points. Robert Garrigus, J.J. Henry playing for potential. Is he on the Ryder Cup for points, or is that he's a potential captain's pick? Hunter Mahan, Robert Streb, who made a little bit of a run at the PGA, Daniel Summerhays, Gary Woodland, Billy Hurley III, who won at Congressional a few weeks ago, Kevin Na, Patrick Rogers, Hudson Swafford, Camilo Villegas, and Angel Cabrera playing in the John Deere. And I would like to see him join up with Emilio Grillo and representing Argentina at the Olympics, but Angel's not playing. Emilio Grillo, who would be a good Olympics pick, actually, right, seeing he's from the Southern Hemisphere, so he's right, probably feeling a little more at home than everybody else. Anyways, Zach Johnson, as we mentioned, Jerry Kelly, as we mentioned, Sean O'Hare, John Rahm is there, guys. This could be his week to win. Surprised nobody picked Rahm. And Tyrone Van Easeweken, who played pretty good golf this past week. Right. So those are your contenders, but I got Zach Johnson. You've got Stricker, and you've got
Kelly.
So, wow.
So, write them down.
It's a lot of older gentlemen we picked there.
No long balls.
Yeah, and then no young guns.
All about precision.
All right, Red, I know that you've been dying all show to talk about the death of your beloved Nike golf equipment business. Yeah. They're still going to make shirts. They're still going to make shoes, which is, if you ask me, it's right where they belong. It was weird when Nike came on with the golf equipment. It was strange. Well, but you
definitely different, yeah. But I've gotten into had a friend that worked for them for a long time. He got out a little bit ahead of this, but got me set up with Nike and Nike irons and golf balls. And I've been hitting them for about 4 years now. I have the Pro Combo set, and really like it a lot. It has the cavity back somewhat from the lower irons, four iron through like six iron, I want to say, and then they go to the blades, seven, eight, nine, pitching wedge. And the ball, I like the ball a lot as well, but they definitely, they never made the inroads that they thought they were going to make as far as doing real damage to the Titleist of the world, especially with the ball.
They spent a lot of money too, boy. A lot of money.
They did.
Those sponsorships on Rory and Tiger are just ridiculous.
Yeah, because not only are they spending the money on those guys, but any guys they sign, they require them to be head to toe Nike. They don't even let them put any other advertising on their shirts or hats or anything. It's the swoosh and nothing else. So they have to pay extra for that.
Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting thing too to see is. Once they go to that, I know when Tiger first signed with them, he was all swoosh, but he was still hitting Titleist clubs until they came out with the Nike clubs because it was a few years. Do they allow them to put any other logos on? Do they have the leverage they once had, or do they, still keep them head to toe in their gear? But
you're saying because they're still under contract, even though they won't be playing the equipment, they're going to wear only Nike.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the least they could do at this point.
Yeah.
If you're getting paid that much money, just you can play whatever clubs you want now.
Right. Play whatever you want, but you still got to be head to toe in our gear and our shoes.
Obviously, it was world-class equipment. Tiger did some of his greatest golf with Nike clubs, and Rory, is a world-class player with Nike clubs.
I've always liked Titleist a lot. I had some of those sticks. These clubs I have now I really like, and I probably won't use them or change for quite some time
until a better offer comes around.
Sure,
that's always you're going to be a free agent soon.
That's always on the table. When Link Soul starts making clubs, maybe we'll.
Hey, there's an opening in the market, but this is great news for Titleist, right? And everybody else
for somebody
is still
there. Great news. They're going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Because Callaway's a big player. Ping's still out there.
TaylorMade.
Well, we don't know what's going on with TaylorMade. They didn't sell.
They could be.
Nobody's going to buy Nike now. It's just going to close down.
Who's Rory going to get? I mean, Tiger may or may not come back next year, and that'll be a big story what clubs he will. But Rory's in his prime right now, and he's going to make a big equipment change. And, you got to wonder who it's going to be.
The thing with him, too, is he made it so recently.
PXG?
That's what I was thinking with a lot of these guys is that PXG is going to gobble them up.
Does PXG, can they afford that? Well, I guess they can. Yeah, they got the GoDaddy.
They don't really have a budget, from what I understand, at PXG. So,
well, they'll get a few more players, I'm sure. I think Titleist was a lot. They're going to go somewhere. I think Rory was a Titleist guy.
Yeah,
it makes sense he would go back there, but I don't know if he burned the bridge or.
I bet you.
I'm not sure. But
a guy like him, though, I think. I don't know if PXG goes for a bunch of guys or they go for one or two big guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like maybe they go for Rory and a Koepka or somebody like that. That, you know, he's not as big a name by any stretch, but Finau would just sign. Just him and Koepka just signed with Nike this year. Right. So they've only been hitting their clubs for 8 months, 9 months.
This stuff's going to happen soon because that new season starts October 13th. So
yep.
Those changes will be made very, very soon.
Well, if they're all smart, they'll go with even roll putter.
Yeah, that's right.
No question there.
Maybe we might see the first even roll on the tour.
They should do that. That's for sure.
But
Rory, he should do that. He should go out to California and see Garen Rife and check out some of his putters because he needs some help with that too.
When the news came across, I was on the golf course, and I think it was, what, Sunday morning that the news came over? Somebody on their cell phone said, oh, my God. And I think it was you, actually, wasn't it? No, who was it?
I texted you as soon as – I don't know when it was, but I definitely sent you a text, like, immediately saying Nike's out.
So, at first, I was shocked, and you think, oh, this is terrible for the game of golf, this and that, the other thing. But, you know, the more you think about it, when's the last time you saw a really nice, like, Nike promo on TV? I mean, there hasn't been much. I think they've known that they were doing this for a while now.
I don't think they penetrated the market of the country club golfer or the – public course golf, I don't think they penetrated it that much.
If you go to Dick's right now, that you won't see, you know, or Golf Galaxy, you don't see a lot of Nike displays or a lot of Nike offerings. It's a hodgepodge kind of where, you know, the MP, they didn't keep up with TaylorMade on the drivers. They didn't keep up with Titleist or Callaway on the irons.
I don't think they ever had. I never liked their drivers. I don't think they ever were even in the mix with their drivers. You know, I love a Titleist driver, but Titleist TaylorMade, you know, Callaway. Nike never came out with a driver that, you know, remember how long it took Tiger to finally hit one that he liked? You know, it was forever with him to get a driver that he liked from them. He held on to his Titleist driver for a while and had it in the bag a few times when he was under contract, and he just wouldn't switch because he didn't like it.
He went back to Titleist one time, I think.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
I think their equipment's been. I hate to use the word inferior because I can't believe that the gap is that big.
Yeah.
It just wasn't accepted for some reason
across the board. I think it was up to par with their irons for the tour level player and in that, you know.
But now for the game improvement crowd?
Yeah, I just never thought they hit the game improvement crowd, and they never really did anything special with their putters. So as much as I like the irons I'm hitting, I really do. They're more, they're not game improvement irons. I don't know if I even should be hitting them the way I play, but I like the way they feel. But I just never liked the Vapor ones that they've come out with the last couple of years, and they put some funky colors on them and stuff to try and market them. And I don't know if, aside from the tour players that are using the higher end stuff, they really hit where they needed to.
So I bet if you went to like a Golf Galaxy and interviewed a guy who works there, does club fitting and all that, what's the most asked for, either driver or iron? I don't think Nike makes the top five, top ten.
Good point, yeah.
Because I think there's more, geez, I like the TaylorMades, I like the Callaways, I like the Titleists. I just don't think Nike's that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, even Mizuno and companies like that are, you know, Ping, we haven't even mentioned Ping. You know, their irons are great. Right. So,
bad and terrible news for the golf industry or what?
I don't think so. I think there's a shift. There's a, you know, overall the golf industry is down from when Nike joined the golf club industry, was what, 15, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
The industry's down, but there's been a lot of bit players coming around. There's a lot of club manufacturers that we don't even see or talk about. There's a lot of stuff out there that you can buy. Probably some foreign players now.
Yeah, really, specialization is at an all-time high now, thanks in part to the internet.
Yeah.
The Even Roll Putter by Garen Rife's a great example. Not affiliated, but although Garen Rife has always made putters, but he's not affiliated with one of the big boys. Yeah. He's an independent.
Yep.
And there's, like you say, a lot of them out there. You had a one-year-old face-on putters.
You know, that's another company that's just out there on their own doing their own thing.
Right.
And you see also different verticals emerging, like companies like Game Golf and the other score tracking software and specialization in apparel and shoes. It's just there's a lot of different players out there that probably wouldn't have had a chance 30 years ago because they needed to be big enough to get it in front of the pro shops.
Yeah.
You know, get it inside the pro shops or get it on the shelves at Dick's. Now they just need word of mouth and a nice website and and you're in business.
No question.
But I say, I think on the bright side for the golf industry is now there's just a bunch of market share to make the remaining companies stronger. And do we need Nike in golf? I don't think so. With all the other great club manufacturers, like you say, whether it be from Mizuno to TaylorMade to Callaway to Titleist.
You could lose TaylorMade, too. You never know who buys them.
Yeah, I mean, they could
Titleist bought Cobra years ago to use it as like a plan B type product line.
Yep.
And now Cobra's, well, they sold it off, and it's a real small player now.
Right.
Somebody could do the same with TaylorMade, ride that for a little while, and then just they might, say Mizuno bought it, for example.
Yeah,
that'd be a bad example,
Yeah, they could shelve the irons completely and just go with drivers and woods.
Yep.
You know, if that's what their wheelhouse is.
We'll make blades out of Mizuno, and we'll make performance improvement clubs out of TaylorMade, and then it becomes a different company entirely.
It's just like you were saying, the golf balls are a whole other category, too, that, you know, when I was at the show, there's 50 different companies making golf balls. Maybe not that high, but there's a ton out there. So, you know, play the Vice golf ball. You know, that feels very, very similar to a Titleist, and you know, the Titleist ball is better than the Nike ball. And I like the Nike ball, but if I had to, somebody's going to give me a free dozen, I had to pick between the two, I'd take the Titleist over the Nike.
Mm-hmm.
But Nike would also like price itself up. I think you know, a lot of times they said we are premium. You know, our golf balls are going to be priced like a Titleist.
Right.
Our irons are going to be priced like the nicest Callaways. And
And it's just like you're not Titleist when it comes to golf balls, for sure.
Right.
So don't try and,
you
know,
shouldn't expect
they didn't jump in their wheelhouse, right?
From Nike, corporate America, that's their image.
Well, they have to.
We're the best.
Yeah, they have to go to that level. But, you know, we all know there's kind of a, you know, everybody has different preference, but there's still a pecking order with golf balls.
Mm-hmm.
It's Titleist. It's number
one. By far the number one.
And it's and on tour and, you know, in pro shops and everywhere you see, you know, three out of four guys in a group on any given day are playing a Titleist something. You know,
and all year long, I've had nobody ask if we sell Nike golf balls.
Right.
That's true.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like you said, you don't see those in the pro shops.
You won't.
You didn't see them in pro shops anywhere. It was
probably Walmart.
Because tour or club pros have their preferences, too, and they are aligned with, you know, they sign with a Cobra or they'll sign with a Titleist or a Callaway. So,
yeah, Nike to me always seemed like something that you would find at Dick's Sporting Goods and Titleist and some of the other brands we talked about is something you would find at the pro shop at your club.
Yeah. And like a Vice, if you're going to tell me that I can hit a ball that's similar to a Nike or to a Titleist and it costs me only $35 a dozen or even less if I order five dozen of them and I go online to their website directly and I don't have to deal with anything else, I mean, that's going to take a lot of people as well. And, you know, they're doing well with their business. So,
see, it was worth a try, and it's a good product.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The key's the product.
Yeah.
And somehow you guys found that. I'm not really sure how you ever did that, but I don't know if that matters. But you walk
there's
into a shop, you got to have Titleist products.
Yes.
Golf ball products.
Yes.
And we're not talking about a bucket for $1.50 each. You can go through and find some Titleists.
You've got to have three or four different Titleists in your display.
You
got to
have an XTs and all that, but 75-80% of people buy the Titleist product.
Yeah.
Nobody asks for Nike golf balls.
Yeah.
I have been asked for
Bridgestone?
Callaway Chrome.
Bridgestone Callaway Chrome, huh? I might have to give that a shot. I played Callaway several years ago. As a matter of fact, one of my hole-in-one balls is a Callaway Blue Dot. Remember when they had the red dot and the blue dot?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then my other hole-in-one ball from 1990 is a Max Fly. So oh, there's another Max brand.
They were big back then.
Freddie Couples. Oh, yeah.
Evolution and all that.
Freddie played those forever.
I sure did.
Yeah. Blast from the past there. But another example of brands come and go. And I think Nike is just going to kind of fade away from the golf industry, and we'll go on with their life, and they won't be missed, honestly.
Yeah. I have two sets of obsolete clubs now. That I had a set of Lynx Parallax irons, too.
Wow. Lynx is another.
They were very good.
Freddie was hitting those. And so now I have two sets of irons that don't exist anymore.
I want to watch this contract with the clothing while you guys are talking about it, because I'd be surprised if there's not an out for somebody like a Rory to say, I signed a contract to use your clubs and your clothing.
Right.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, especially when that's going to hinder his chance to get a big contract with someone else if he can't wear that on his shirt, if he can't wear Titleist on his shirt.
Or FitJoy. Or
see, with him, I think he's different. I think he's like Jordan. Jordan wears Under Armour. He doesn't hit Under Armour clubs. So I think Rory will continue to wear Nike because they're going to pay him more than anybody else could pay him. Even, you know, Titleist is not going to pay him, you know, the multi-million dollars that he's getting from Nike. But a Brooks Koepka or a Tony Finau, who would want to add some sponsors to their gear now and add some more money because they're not getting what Rory's getting. Because, you know, let's face it, there's about five or six guys out there that are head-to-toe guys that are getting that big, big money. And
those last two guys you just mentioned just switched this year.
Yeah.
Finau and Koepka.
So, I mean, those guys will probably, even Nike might even let them, you know, walk a little bit if to avoid any issues. But I think they hang on to Rory and they keep paying him boatloads of money to be head to toe and go hit whatever clubs you want, and they'll pay you a little bit. But, you know, they're only going to know about it word of mouth.
Either way, pretty big news going on this week. We had a 58, we had Nike dropout, and we have the Olympics. And, we were really hot on old Bryson DeChambeau. Remember how he won the U.S. Amateur and then the NCAA Individual Championship, then came to the Masters and was in contention on Sunday. He didn't earn his tour card, though.
Nope.
He really fizzled out after the beginning of the year. And the Travelers was DeChambeau's 12th allotted start, and he does not have enough points. He can try to Monday qualify at the Deer and the Wyndham, but he's unlikely to earn his card for 2016-17. So the web.com playoffs just got a little more interesting because he'll go there if he finishes top 25. He can get his card that way. So
maybe he should change the length of the shafts of his clubs.
He's been under the radar because he hasn't been playing good. So I don't know exactly the reason why he hasn't played as good, but he better get it together in short order for the web.com tour playoffs. Ton of good players there. Including guys like Jaeger, who can shoot 58. So what we thought was a guarantee is now kind of up in the air. But something more to watch as we head into the fall. Before we get out of here, got to give you the trivia answer. If you answered the last gold medal winner in the game of golf in the Olympics in 1904, if you answered Canada's George Lyon, then you'd be correct. He captured the gold medal in St. Louis with a 3-2 upset of reigning U.S. and Western amateur champion Chandler Egan, capping five straight days of 36-hole match play at Glen Echo Golf Club. So back then they played match play, and they played five straight days of 36 holes.
That way, or the way they used to, or they do the World Cup, is the way they need to go. Two-man teams or match play. Get rid of the stroke play. We see that all year long.
Something different. Or team play, or combined team play somehow in there, too, I think would be good for the Olympics. But I'm not going to pass judgment.
Right. Still watch it.
Until I see what happens this week.
Still rooting for Team USA in those high-top Stars and Stripes golf shoes.
Next week we'll have a lot of judgment for you on the Olympics. We'll talk all about it. So
talk all about their attire.
Thanks, everybody, for spending some time with us on the GolfJ.com podcast. Connect with us online at Twitter at TheGolfJ, on Instagram at @_GolfJ. Search for GolfJ on Facebook or go to Facebook.com/GolfJ. All of our episodes in the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at GolfJ.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. to talk about the Travelers Championship and preview Olympic golf in Rio. Until then, hit them long, not often.